This is the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 22 on the Mac App Store. Hi, welcome back for the second episode of 2011. Today I've got a really special treat for you. I've got a special guest who's already on the Mac App Store and is going to tell us how it's working out for him. But first, a quick look at the news. Just like in the last episode, I have no script. I'm just going through my Instapaper account and mention briefly all the articles that I found noteworthy. One that I missed for last year was actually about the promo codes. The United States colleagues of ours had these for quite a while now. And it's been really painfully missed for us Europeans to not being able to do international promo codes. The other change that was also done in December was that security for push notifications got improved to a higher security thing. But, well, you only care about that if you actually have push notifications. Most us small timers only use local push notifications. So we don't care about that. It turns out Apple seems to have quite a few jobs out looking for people with navigation software experience. It might indicate that there is no more navigation stuff coming our way, possibly some fruit from the tree that was planted last year with the acquisition of one or the other navigation company. Maybe they're going to do some navigation thing like turn-by-turn navigation that you can see right now in Google Android for free. But I kind of doubt that at the same time, because that would alienate all the other vendors that have high-priced GPS apps on the App Store. When Apple announced FaceTime, they stressed that they're going to be really open and everybody will be able to interact with them. And at that time, Skype actually said, yeah, we're going to implement that if that's possible. It seems they didn't want to wait any longer because Apple has not handed over the protocols and everything that's necessary for FaceTime to an open consortium so far. So what they did is they did their own Skype video calling, or maybe it was in the works anyway and they just got it launched yet. It works pretty well. I tried it out over an edge connection. You get like a fast picture sliding show, and over 3G or Wi-Fi it works absolutely brilliantly. They have a very nice interface. It looks very similar to the phone app, so I wonder if they ever were rejected for the reason might lead to customer confusion, because somebody might think he's now actually using the phone and not Skype. But, well, they got in the App Store, so that's a good sign for us that Apple is not too anal about certain things anymore. The other thing about rules, you know, there was this app Camera Plus that got pulled because they had the shutter button modified to snap pictures with. That's now back with a bigger and better version 2. And there's no volume shutter button. I hear it's quite good. And they made lots of money with it. Millions and millions and millions they're making with it. There was another app right after Camera Plus 2 returned that was set to have the volume shutter, but as you know it, Apple doesn't like that. So immediately after them gaining a bit of publicity for kind of, haha, they are the rebels, they do what they shouldn't do, and Apple doesn't know it. Well, once Apple learned about that, the app was pulled here, and they will probably get the stink eye. Another tip for you, if you're experiencing slow downloads on iTunes, that might be because you're using the Google or OpenDNS to resolve your addresses. iTunes is not entirely hosted in Apple's house. Actually, most of it is hosted on the Akamai network. And there, it's using the IP address of your DNS query, it seems, so that you get the closest download center node or whatever that's called. And if you use one of these open services, you look like you are in the United States, whereas if you used like your provider's DNS, you would get a much closer download center. So if you have slow downloads on iTunes, try have a look if you use one of these, and if not, go use the one that your provider provides you with, if you want to speed up your iTunes. Next thing, it's already a January story. The first Android Trojan has been found. Haha, ne. And it's spreading from Chinese app stores, it says. So, haha, that's something we don't have to worry about on iPhone, because Apple keeps a tight lock on everything. And if you don't have, like, if your iPhone is not jailbroken and you install lots of unvetted apps from so-called alternate app stores, hint, then you are not in a danger there. But I found quite funny that there's actually already so many Android devices out there that Chinese programmers would create a Trojan for that. We now know that there might be a new announcement related to hardware later this month. I was told that Apple is always doing an event towards the end of January announcing new hardware. The latest rumor is that it's actually already the iPad 2. So we'll see about that. But one indication of that is that Apple is restricting employee vacations. And they usually do that around the time when they expect lots of new support incidents, and you get new support incidents obviously if there's no hardware and people need to get used to that. Which brings us to the big topic of this episode of the podcast, the Mac App Store that launched on January 6th. In all, the developers who managed to get something ready for the launch, it's been more or less a very stressful time for them, but also at the same time very rewarding. Just to give one example, Evernote has netted 40,000 new users, they said, on top of what they had before. So, well, people just want to get great software that's free. And, you know, Evernote has this system where you can use most of the basic functionality for free. And so the app is also for free. And if you want to use the pro features, then you pay a certain amount. But 40,000 new users thought that's a very enticing offer. I myself use Evernote myself as well on all my devices. So I've got it on my iPhone, my iPad, my Macs. And it's a very good thing to basically have a central repository for all your notes and reminders and stuff you come across on the internet. You put it into Evernote because there you find it. So it's like your extended brain. And actually, it was the first productivity thing that I installed after I got the App Store working, for which you have to install the 10.6.6 update for Mac OS X. It was only second to the new Twitter app, because I'm a fan of Tweety. I had Tweety on the Mac. I've paid for Tweety 1 on the iPhone, Tweety 2 on the iPhone, and I was kind of, well, grinding my teeth that it didn't look like we're going to get an update for the Tweety for Mac. But finally, it materialized. It's now called Twitter for Mac, and you get it for free on the App Store, and I love it. It's a great, great app. So that was number one I got. Number two was Evernote. And number three, you would never guess, was a game. The game Chopper 2. Because I kind of like the way Chopper 2 is made. It reminds me of a game I was playing in Italy in an arcade when I was young. And the great thing about Chopper 2 is that you actually can use your iPhone to steer it. So it's like a console experience. I installed the Mac App Store also on my Mac Mini, which is hooked up to my flat screen TV. And over my Wi-Fi, I'm able to use my iPhone to steer it. And that's like what do I need a Wii for if I have Chopper 2 on my television and have basically a touch game controller for it? And the great thing is, it's only $1. David beat everybody to the punch by just going the lowest rate possible, and it netted him quite a bit of traffic and hello. Early numbers from several people. It looks like there have been 1 million downloads on the first day from the Mac App Store. That's also quite a feat. I think even Apple said that they had this download. And so far what we hear from developers is that it's a different kind of market. There are less people on the Mac App Store than have iOS devices, which is the reverse of what I would have thought. But it seems there's already more mobile devices out there than there are Macs. But I can imagine that it's a perfect fit, because more and more people have a Mac, and it's so easy to get your apps via that. And even if you have a iOS device like an iPhone or iPad, you're used to this experience. So the hurdle is extremely low. So that's it for the news. Let's get to our interview. And that's it for the news. I have a special guest today. His name is Chris Harris from Improbable Sciences. He's going to tell us how it is to actually have an app on the Mac App Store. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Oliver.
So I already said you're the founder and basically sole proprietor of Improbable Sciences. You're doing full-time iOS and now also Mac development and consulting, and you're doing that for a year. Tell us, what did you do before you got into developing for the Apple platform?
Well, I started the company Improbable Sciences at during my last year of college. And prior to that time, I was mostly focused on interactive art.
Interactive art. Is this like you're a street performer mime, or what is interactive art?
It's more like combining physical installations along with digital and electronic interactivity. I made a number of installations while I was there, including a big wall of lights that would interact with participants in the same room, all the way up to things that are much more like a traditional video game.
And so that's quite a jump from interactive art to iOS development. How did this go about?
Well, I'd gotten an iPhone when it first came out, and they're just amazing little devices, and I wanted to see what I could do with one. And it slowly started to spin into a full-time job.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a Mac right from the start, or did you get one so that you could get started?
I've been a Mac user since before I could walk.
So artists are generally the Mac people, right?
Yeah. My whole family is Mac users, so I got indoctrinated right from the start.
Yeah, it's the same with me. on my side, it was the family of my wife who was totally Macified, and I was a Windows person. But then when I got interested in development, I had to get my first MacBook Pro, and ever since, everything Mac. I've got no Windows machines left in my house.
Yeah, well, I used Windows a bit in my rebellious teen years, but then I realized that was a bad idea.
All right. So you founded Improbable Sciences, and you told me you did a couple of apps before you actually released your first big one, which was a game, 8-Track Mind. That did quite well, didn't it?
At first it was... It didn't really catch on, but about 2 months after it was released, it actually got featured by Apple. Wow. And so I had several very good weeks, got some excellent reviews of it, and it made a decent chunk of change for me.
Mm-hmm. And then the second big thing you released was ColorSphere, basically a color picker, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's a color picker with a twist. What it does is it'll help you automatically select colors that look great together. Using a bit of painter's algorithms, traditional sort of art theory.
Cool. And I think there's already a second version out, isn't there?
Yes, I just released the second version, ColorSphere 2, a couple of weeks ago now.
All right. So we see you are a well-established iOS developer. What prompted you to also try this wacky new thing called the Mac App Store?
Well, when Apple first announced the Mac App Store, I immediately saw the, commercial value of having an app there at launch. So I went through my notebook of ideas and I picked out, I picked out Screen Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
It was an application that I'd wanted to use, and I just never had the time to develop it. So with the opportunity of the Mac App Store coming out, I felt that was something worth developing.
So tell us briefly, what is the unique selling proposition of Screen Ninja? What does it do?
It does two things that I'm not aware that any other Mac app do.
Which are?
One, it helps you take time-lapse recordings of your screen. So if you're doing something that takes several hours to complete, designing an icon in Photoshop or designing an application user interface, mm-hmm. you can compress that down to seconds and show other people your creative process.
Cool.
And the other thing that it does is while it's doing that, it can hide any other application on your screen, replace your desktop picture, or hide the icons on your desktop so that your Mac looks clean and tidy and not like a mess like I'm sure all of ours do.
How does it deal with me moving around the window that I'm working in? Like if I have Xcode and then I move it from the left to the right, what does happen in that case?
Well, it'll work exactly like you expect. There are some APIs in macOS 10 that allow you to ask the Windows server to draw specific windows.
Mm-hmm.
So I just draw it exactly like it appears on the screen, except minus anything you don't want to see.
Mm-hmm. So the screen, the window that I'm recording will always be in the center? Or
whatever position it is on your screen.
Uh-huh. So if I don't want it to move in the time lapse, then I shouldn't move the window.
Exactly.
All right. So have you done any recordings yourself of your work that maybe can be seen somewhere?
Yes, I've done a few recordings. If you go to getscreenninja.com, there's a user gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my brother, who's a comic book artist, he's drawn one thing, and I've put up the process of a few of the icons for my applications.
Ah, cool. So you can see, you basically eat your own dog food.
Exactly.
So tell us, there's probably quite a few people listening who have one or more apps on the iOS App Store and who are more or less envious of guys like you who've taken the plunge and released the Mac app. How much of a difference is it to release something on the Mac App Store versus the traditional App Store?
Well, the process of dealing with Apple is very similar. You've got to sign your code. You've got to register your bundle IDs. You've got to deal with iTunes Connect. So that's all pretty much the same. There's a few differences, but they highlight them in the documentation. Mm-hmm. But where it gets real different is the actual APIs. As you know, on the iPhone, we use Cocoa Touch. Mm-hmm. And on the Mac, we use AppKit. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of differences. The most notable one is with scroll views. Mm-hmm. On the iPhone, if you think they're difficult to deal with, you don't know anything.
So you sent it to Apple. Did it about take the same time to get approved as on iOS?
Well, I sent it to Apple right before the deadline of the 31st of January to get your apps on the store before launch. So I think the review was just about 4 days, which is a little bit less than it typically is for me. Mm-hmm. But I get the impression from other Apple developers that Apple was putting a lot of its review team behind getting all of the Mac apps approved mm-hmm. in time.
Did you get it approved right away?
Yes, it was on the store first thing.
So did you at any point think maybe possibly Apple might not approve the app because it does something really magical that's not so like a regular app? Was this in any way worrying you at some time?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think every developer is worried that the app's going to get rejected right after they submit it. I was worried both about the receipt validation, mm-hmm. As well as that they might not like, the unique functionality of the app.
In this case, you're not doing anything, you're not using any private APIs, so to speak, as we know from iOS, where there are APIs that have not been exposed by Apple, and so we are not allowed to use them. You're only doing legal stuff, right?
That's correct. There were a few features that I would have liked to put in, but those have been trimmed out.
Mm-hmm. So it's my impression generally you can do many more things on the Mac than you can do on iOS, right? Many more kind of magical things.
Well, definitely. It's just a more mature API. So there's, this whole years and years and years of features being built onto OS X, mm-hmm. whereas you don't have that on iOS. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk maybe about something that the other half of my listeners is interested in. Are you making good money with this Mac thing here?
Well, my sales are up significantly over what they were on iOS.
Do you see kind of improving your iOS sales that you have something on the Mac App Store? Is there kind of an advertisement connection that people think, hey, that's a cool app, let's see what iOS apps it does, or is it completely different?
Well, I think it's a little bit too early to tell that. The Mac App Store has at this point only been open for 4 days. Hmm. So it's a little bit early to tell the trends.
So, but what is your feeling? Will it be a viable platform? Is it something that would recommend other iOS developers should get into? Or is it something that you would rather have for yourself?
I think developers should definitely look at it. It depends on, if it's right for the types of applications you're developing. But I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. I think it's slowly going to gain. And when it comes time for macOS Lion to come out, I think that's when Apple's really going to get behind this with giving it some of the same advertising attention that the iOS App Store has gotten.
Mm-hmm. I just installed it myself on all my Macs, the 10.6.6 update, so that I get the App Store. And what I especially liked is that you can install one app that you've purchased on all your Macs. There was once the rumor that you could only install it on 5 machines, but that has been debunked. You can literally install it on dozens of machines as long as you control them. So that it's actually a very cool and convenient way how you get software on your Mac, as opposed to a tool like Screen Ninja in the past. You would maybe have a trialware on your homepage, and then I could purchase an unlock code via PayPal or something. Now it's made been made much easier for the user, right?
Yeah, both as a developer and as a consumer of applications, the Mac App Store is a terrific thing. It makes everything a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we have this example of the iTunes remote control thing, Cover Sutra, that had an original price, I think, of something like $15, and now on the App Store, it's the new version is like $5. Is that something you see yourself, that you don't that you can charge lower prices but still make quite a bit of money because of the quantity of purchases that you gain through the convenience of the App Store?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I never would have been able to have gotten the visibility I've got for Screen Ninja had I released it, you know, as shareware on my site with an unlock code, and, you know, I would have had to charge $20 or $30 for it, like, you know, typical Mac shareware prices were just a few weeks ago.
Mm. So we can agree the Mac App Store is here to stay and has a great future.
I think that's, you can count on it.
All right. So, Chris, it's been nice talking to you. When we're closing now, is there something that you would like to tell our listeners, or maybe upcoming projects, or where they can reach you, or what apps of yours they should check out?
Well, I'd love for everyone to check out both Screen Ninja on the Mac and ColorSphere 2 on iOS, and you can find out more about all of my applications at improbablesciences.com.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks for the insight, Chris, that you gave us about the Mac App Store. I wish you good luck going forward. And I'm going to definitely check out Screen Ninja and also have a look at the ColorSphere app of yours. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. See you. So there you have it. My interview with Chris Harris. By the way, if you remember this name, that might be because he's the guy who developed the DT video encoder component that I'm selling on my App Store. And after our conversation off air, I chatted with him quite a bit because there are a couple of additional components that we might bring to market together. Now get back to coding. Today's show is over.